Well, hey, what's going on? Happy Saturday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up in just a minute, myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live, very late on Friday night into Saturday morning. But first, in case you weren't able to stay up, let's recap the Reds and the Giants from Friday night. Reds are starting a long West Coast road trip, and they got off to a good start in the top of the first against Giants starting pitcher Logan Webb, one of the best in the sport. Ellie De La Cruz ripped a 105-mile-per-hour single to left field. Ellie then stole second base, and then with two outs, Spencer Steer smoked a double 395 feet off the wall, making it 1-0 Reds. But that lead was short-lived. Bottom of the first, Andrew Abbott gave up a home run to the second batter that he faced, Tyro Estrada. That made it 1-1. Giants would get another run off Abbott in the second inning, and the Reds trailed 2-1. But in the top of the third, Ellie De La Cruz had another single over 100 miles per hour. Ellie then stole second base, number 25 on the season. Mike Ford walked, and then a bloop single from Spencer Steer tied the game up at 2. In the top of the fourth, Will Benson singled, and TJ Friedl doubled him home. That made it 3-2 Reds. Andrew Abbott would get through five innings, did give up six hits, one walk, but only gave up two earned runs and struck out two. Emilio Pagan came in next. He threw a scoreless sixth inning, did take advantage of the big ballpark in San Francisco with two pretty long fly ball outs. But in the bottom of the eighth, Stuart Fairchild came in pinch hitting for Jake Fraley against a lefty, and Stuart Fairchild hit an inside the park home run, making it 4-2 Reds. Justin Wilson, he got four outs. Lucas Sims got two outs on his birthday. The Reds turned it over to Alexis Diaz, trying to hold on to a 4-2 lead. Alexis Diaz hadn't pitched since May 5th. He did walk Mike Yastrzemski, but then he was able to get a strikeout of Blake Sable to end the game. The eight-game losing streak is over. Reds win 4-2. Reds now 17-21 on the season. Right after the game, here's what Spencer Steer had to say.
Spencer Steer, put this in the understatement department. How much did you need this W tonight?
Yeah, felt good to get back in the win column. We never stop believing in ourselves. We're a good baseball team, and eight straight losses will make you question that a little bit, but at the end of the day, we believe that we're a good baseball team, and we're better than what we've shown. So, tonight was just a step in the right direction for us, and hopefully we can, carry some momentum in this West Coast trip.
Beyond believing in yourself, how do you keep your sanity losing eight straight?
You just got to keep going. It's the beauty of this game. You just got to show up every day. So that's been our big focus, showing up every day and just keep going. We knew this was going to end eventually, and we were going to find a way out of this, and I thought we played a really complete game tonight.
And for you personally, everyone goes through ups and downs and rough stretch, but do you feel like even though you weren't getting perhaps the results or the numbers, you were still having good at-bats?
Yeah, I think I've hit the ball a little harder, and the results haven't been there past couple weeks, so you just got to keep going, man. Just got to keep going, and hitting balls hard, you feel good, but at the end of the day, results, those feel good too. So just finding a balance and just keeping your head on straight and showing up every day and trying to make something happen.
Well, speaking of results, you got them tonight. You drive in two of the four runs. That had to feel good.
Yeah, I got a nice little lucky hit there, and it was nice to see that one fall. Yeah. And that's just how the game is sometimes. You're going to catch the breaks or you're not. So just trying to keep a smile on my face, and I'm lucky to do what I do. So show up every day and grateful for where I'm at.
At least for one night, the stash worked.
Yeah, finally. So hopefully there's some luck in this thing still.
And here's the winning pitcher, Andrew Abbott.
Mixed execution on a couple pitches, fell behind a little too much. But overall, it was good results, I think. Enough to move forward and kind of change in the bullpen, and hopefully next time out we're a lot better than that.
I think you stranded a runner in every inning, so a little bit of damage control as well tonight?
Yeah, it felt like one of those nights for sure. They had some really good swings, really good at bats. I was missing with some pitches, couldn't really get ahead of guys, as I said. But, you know, the defense behind me, the hitters having some timely hitting and stuff, taking some pressure off, allowing me to just kind of take a deep breath and relax and get out of those innings.
How much you guys need tonight?
It's huge. Good for momentum, you know, ride it into tomorrow, you know, just keep playing. We knew that we were going to turn the corner eventually. Just stay true to the process, stay true to the routine. It'll continue to happen.
All you guys have had games in the rotation. It feels like where it hasn't been, you know, seven shutout innings, but you've battled and kept the team in the game. How important are games like that for you guys?
You know, I think every game's important, but those kind of stand out. You know, whatever you can give in those moments is big. You know, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, whatever it is. Every guy's ready to go out there and throw 100 pitches or more. You know, you just have to go out and compete if you don't have it those days. You know, just try to give them the best chance to win that you can, and, you know, hopefully you do get a win like today.
And lastly, here's Stuart Fairchild.
Is that about as exciting as it gets, that inside the Parker?
Yeah, I'd say so. I thought I got it off the bat, to be honest with you, and I was kind of half jogging, and then when I saw it take that crazy hop, I was full speed ahead, and the only thing in my mind was, let's go all the way. And once I saw JR wheeling me around third, I was like, okay, we got to do this.
So you were relying on JR going to third base?
Yeah, for sure. I was it was close, right? So the ball was coming in, and he was waiting until the last second, really, to make the decision. And as soon as he decided that he was going to send me, it was full speed ahead.
Yesterday, you guys, not the base running game you hope. You guys keep running.
Yeah.
How important is it to keep running on nights like tonight?
Yeah, they made our coaching staff made a point to address that. That's part of our identity. That's how we're going to win a lot of games this year. And we're really good at that. So we don't ever want to lose that part of our game and our identity. So yeah, we're never going to stop that.
Have you thought about this Fairchild highlight reel? I mean, we're in early May, and you've already had some highlight reel catches, and now inside the park.
Yeah, it's been a fun start to the year. Obviously, as a team, like, this is a big win for putting us in the right direction. But individually, you know, I'm just trying to make the most of the opportunities and the moments that I get. And, hopefully we can compile that and turn it into some more wins.
At what point did you realize you better speed up a little bit?
As soon as I saw it hit off the wall, I'd say that's when I really started to get going.
Okay, so you were, I'm not sure where you were by that.
I was probably rounding first around there.
Okay,
yeah.
So you just turned it on then?
Yeah, that's when I went from about 60% to 100%.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. You hit an inside Parker as a pinch hitter, you know. How, like, warmed up, to, I guess, were your legs at that point? As it?
Fortunately, I was down in the cage area the inning before when I saw the lefty pitcher start to get warm in the bullpen. I took some swings off the machine, and then I also did a couple sprints right beforehand. So I was warm enough. I'm definitely fortunate I did a couple sprints before that.
Well, Stuart Fairchild's inside the park home run to left center field. That was our deep drive of the day. Exit velocity of 103.6. It did go 288 feet. When it bounced off the wall, took a nice little bounce away from the center fielder, and Stuart Fairchild motored around, just barely beating the tag, made a really nice slide head first into home plate. And our deep drive of the day, sponsored as always by Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production. They specialize in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks as always to our friends at DSC. All right, checking out scores around the NL Central. The Brewers beat the St. Louis Cardinals 11-2. Cubs beat the Pirates 7-2. So your NL Central standings on Saturday morning: Brewers are 23-15, Cubs 23-16, Reds 17-21, 6 games back. Pirates now 17-22, and the Cardinals are 15-23. Reds now 2.5 behind the Nationals and the Padres for the final NL wildcard spot. All right, well, here is myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube. One quick note, it was brought to my attention after the show ended. We get into the Reds minor league talk. Bubba Thompson played in the first game of the doubleheader, and it was Justice Thompson in the second game of the doubleheader. Justice Thompson got the 2 hits. not Bubba Thompson, but it's after 2 a.m. I'm not even trying to edit that back out. So sorry about that air. It's going to be probably really funny as you listen back to this. But nonetheless, here is myself and Trace.
Boy, I'll tell you what. I just want to say this. Start the show. Nick, it's a winning edition of Chatterbox Reds. I don't know what to make of it. I just know this feels a little bit better than what we've been through the last week and a half. And I'm not saying we're back yet. Some are saying it. I'm not saying it, but I do know this. I needed this win. There was a chance tonight, Nick. If we didn't get a win, I was just going to pack it up. You know, I'm not a quitter, but boy, I'd have been close tonight. Running on fumes, and on top of that, I couldn't do 9 in a row. So, but it doesn't matter. They found a way to win. Nick, your overall, I guess, assessment here. You feeling good late at night? This is your neck of the woods, by the way. For those that don't know, Nick Kirby, night owl. Dude doesn't, I mean, what time do you usually go to bed anyways, Nick?
Well, it's all over the place. Shout out to Betty. This is her first Reds win. Last Reds win I saw, was in the hospital waiting for Betty to arrive. Nick Lodolo right. Pitched to Jim. Betty came and the Reds lost 8 in a row, so... I was getting nervous. I was like, I don't know, what am I supposed to do with this kind of information? So shout out to Betty. But because of Betty, my times are very different now, so I don't really know. There's not really, you know, day, night. It's but I do have we do have T-ball practice at 9 in the morning tomorrow. So first one of the year. Let's go. Hey,
Did you schedule that?
I would never schedule anything at 9 o'clock in the morning. I wouldn't schedule my funeral at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Good luck with that tomorrow. That'll be like herding cats.
I'll be on the high of a Reds win, baby. Nothing could bring you down after the Reds win to end the 8-game losing streak.
That's right. Let's get into some Reds baseball. Where do you want to start?
Let's talk about overall. I mean, ironic that... Reds in the losing streak against Logan Webb, one of the best pitchers in the sport. Reds had 15 hard hit balls against Logan Webb, which is insane. Also, you know, not to take away too much from Logan Webb, but you also kind of like, man, you pitch in this ballpark, it feels like anyone could put up a mid-3 ERA. It almost feel, Trace, I feel like every time I see the Reds play in a ballpark like this, feels like the Reds team is built for this type of ballpark.
It does. It does genuinely feel that way. I don't know if it's just because of the speed. Sometimes I thought about that last year when you'd watch this team play. The team speed certainly helps, and it showcases more often than not when you have a bigger ballpark. But maybe, I don't know. I don't know if the Reds pitchers are, again, the Reds pitchers have been great for the most part all year, so I can't really suggest that it's just because of the big ballpark as to why they're doing well. But maybe they're just more confident, you know? And I do think that there's some semblance of truth there. And it always seems like, I guess, the guy that I always point towards when you have a big ballpark is Hunter Green. I don't know if I have no idea if the splits would back me up, but it just seems like every time I watch Hunter Green throw the ball in a big ballpark, he shoves. But you know, shout out to Andrew Abbott. And I before we get into him, obviously, we'll get into him in the back half of the show. But I just want to say, this has been building, though, Nick. Like, it has been building. We've been frustrated because it hasn't led into any wins of maybe over the last 3 or 4 days. But the Reds looked incredibly abysmal, what I would call, 10 days ago, somewhere in that ballpark. And then it got really, really bad. And then about 3 or 4 days ago, call it, you know, I don't know, May 9th, May 8th, they did look like they were having better approaches to the plate. And they started to hit some balls hard. And they ran into some dumb bad luck the other day. And I know that everyone hates to hear that. But they did. In the bottom of the second inning the other day, they should have, without question, scored more than one run based off of the circumstances, events that went down. And they didn't. And they only scored 4 today. So it's not like they, you know, it's not like they got, they do, I will say this, Nick, they do need to find a way to score more, given the at-bats that they've had. And I think tonight they had some really good at-bats, and playing a big ballpark, though, sometimes, you know, to be fair to the Reds, though, they got some fortunate breaks as well. So Lucas Sims is one of them. But having said that, give the offense credit. I mean, they bounced back and they found a way to kind of to try to right the ship, per se.
Yeah, the last two games against the Diamondbacks were they felt completely different than the series against the Orioles, where it was just a brutal offensive series. I hope I never see a offensive series like that again. But the last two games against the Diamondbacks felt better. It's nice to finally see them get the results, because I'm tired of hearing myself say, well, they had some pretty good at bats, you know. It rings really hollow when you're losing, you know, 6, 7, 8 games in a row. And I get that. So it was just nice to see them rewarded with the win, because I thought from the get-go, it felt like there was some more aggressive. I know Chris and John were on the broadcast. Will Benson had a first pitch single. Felt like that was an intentional approach. Like, either, you know, someone told Will, hey, why don't you go out, take a big swing on the first pitch against Logan Webb. He's a guy that you don't want to get behind in the count on. You don't want to get deep into an account, because he can put you away with his nasty changeup. So I felt like there was some real intentional. Felt like, you know, whoever's, you know, pulling those strings behind the scenes did a good job tonight with a good game plan against an elite pitcher who's even better in his home ballpark.
Yeah, Webb's a great arm. I mean, the fact that the Reds got to Webb a little bit was encouraging. To your point about Benson, I mean, there is something to be said about a guy that's striking out, what, 50% of the time. When you get yourself in a position where you're having that many swings and misses, you got to give yourself more opportunities than maybe just one or two swings at when you're up there. And I think that sometimes, Will Benson, to be fair to him, though, he's last year for sure. This year's been different. But last year, you could make the argument that he was the most disciplined, one of the most, you know, more patient hitters that this team had. So maybe that got to him a little bit. He started taking too many, and maybe he got some advice from David Bell. And that's been a kind of a topic of conversation, I guess, of late with David Bell, because when your team starts to lose this many games in a row, I don't care who you are, the manager's going to start to catch some of the heat for that. And there's been a question of, you know, whether or not David Bell's been on guys, or whether or not he's been maybe trying to coach guys behind the scenes. Cause certainly during the media and to the media, he keeps a very, very, you know, close fist. I don't think any of us believe what he says sometimes, but he never really comes out and says maybe how he truly feels. Maybe he had a team conversation and just said, listen, guys, like we got to go up there with an approach and be aggressive and not be passive. And maybe Benson took that to heart. Who knows?
Yeah. It's again, David Bell, like, people, if you're someone who's going to get upset at David Bell, you just stop watching his press conferences. You're just going to get mad. It's going to upset you. This is who David Bell is. What he says in the press conferences is in no way a representation of how he manages his team. I don't know how he manages his team. You don't know how he manages his team. He's very behind the scenes. That's what he does. And you can hate all that, but you don't know anything more. And the press conferences are just fluff. It's just fluff. He's intentionally trying in the press conferences not to give any bulletin board material, not to say something that his player is going to get upset about. That's his intention. So just stop watching the press conferences. You're going to get mad.
Right. Yeah, he's 100% a player's coach. Now, there's going to be people that are going to argue that they don't like that. That's a different conversation for another day, obviously. But, all right, let's jump into Stewart Fairchild. We obviously mentioned him for the DSC deep drive of the day. And this is what Stewart's role is supposed to be, right? I think this is where we talked about before. Maybe these guys were asked to do more than what they're capable of doing, and it started to affect what they were actually good at. And I, again, whether or not that's fair or unfair, I don't know. You know, we're trying to make excuses, if we're being honest, for some maybe quadruple A type players and or guys that, you know, really shouldn't be considered everyday big league players. And we've never said that Stewart Fairchild was an everyday player. And I think that tonight was a perfect shining example of exactly what you would want out of Stewart Fairchild if we had what we would call a complete team. And unfortunately, as of late, we've not been one, so he's been stuck into some tough situations. But shout out to him. I'm good. Listen, it's weird that we've pigeonholed ourselves, or we've found ourselves. I don't know how we got here, Nick, but it just seems like we've come to the point of trying to defend Stewart Fairchild more times than not. You know, and he's made some blunders. Listen, he didn't know how many outs there were. you know, whatever, at the beginning of the season when he was playing center field. The other day, he didn't take a peek to look to see whether or not their ball was hitting to center field. It's like, it just seems like every mistake he makes, everyone holds on to, but then they're going to forget about this in 5 days. Like, they're going to forget that he came in lefty on lefty in a tight game, hits one off the wall, turns on the Jets, he's got speed, he hits an inside the park home run. I don't know. What are we supposed to do?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. This is the role that Stuart Fairchild was supposed to be in, pinch hitting against a left-handed pitcher, coming in late playing defense, showing off his speed, being that fourth outfielder. That's what he is. He's not your everyday starting center fielder. If you have to go a long period of time, he's going to be exposed a little bit. Right. But this is what he is. And Trace, I didn't know this yesterday. I don't know if you saw it. So after I was reading a little bit, do you know what happened on that Stuart Fairchild play the other day? Where he got doubled deked. Up? He got deked by Kevin Newman.
I know that he got deked, but I didn't read. I don't know. You know, I know that he got deked. I watched the play.
The Diamondbacks broadcast kind of showed it a lot more, and Newman after the game said it was intentional.
Yeah, you're gonna give. I mean, am I supposed to sit here and give Kevin Newman credit because he did something that you do all the time when you play baseball? Is you tag the guy when they steal second to act like he's at, and then I think the second baseman even tagged him too. I'm not giving Kevin Newman credit. If you think that I'm gonna give Kevin Newman credit on my 19th hour of working today, you done lost your mind. Kevin Newman can piss off. He's a terrible player. Tucker Barnhart too. Just because those guys are in the big league still, and they're not good. I'm gonna tell you right now. I'll make a guarantee. I'll sell Chatterbox if Kevin Newman's the starting shortstop for a World Series team. How about that?
Oh no. Yeah. I think I feel about Tucker how you feel about Kevin, to be honest.
Yeah, he's not good either.
I got a little vitriol.
How's that guy still in the major leagues? Not that we need to get on this subject, but seriously.
I don't know. I saw him at the race in Phoenix.
Yeah. I thought he was retired when you told me that.
I did too. I thought he was done. It was like a Sunday afternoon in the middle of spring training.
Yeah. All right. Ellie De La Cruz stole third base with with one out. It was one out, to be fair. It was one out. So.
It's allowed.
Well, that makes a lot more sense, in my opinion. It makes a lot more sense. One out, zero outs, and two outs are just completely different situations in a baseball game. One out makes incredibly more sense. But that's the thing with Ellie, though. Like, that's what I was trying to say this morning when we didn't have internet. We're trying to do off the bench. Is like, it's just hard to. It's really hard to put any kind of. I don't really know what the word is, but it's really hard to put any kind of guidelines or boundaries around Ellie De La Cruz because I don't think he's going to listen to him anyways, and I think that his gut is just nobody can throw me out. And when they do throw him out, he thinks in his mind that it was luck, and he might be right. Like, he might be right. It's just how can we find a way to where we really do understand time and score a little bit better. But you know what? I'm just going to say it out loud now. Ellie De La Cruz, I'm closer to you, Nick, than I would be somebody else that's frustrated with him. Like, he's so damn good, and he's such a blessing for this team that it's like, if he makes a mistake, I guess it's just like part of it. I mean, I don't know. We can get mad about it, Nick, but he's just so damn good. He's the best player on this team by far. And, you know, I don't know how you feel in regards to the base stealing, but, you know, it mattered tonight. He doesn't just get phantom, like, you know, what's the word to use? Like token steals or pad the stat steals. He gets some of those sometimes, but very rarely. Most of the time they know he's stealing, he takes the bag, and it's important.
I did think that when he got into a rundown when the Reds were down 3-1 against the Diamondbacks, that was the first one that I was actually upset about. Everything else I've just been like, yeah, Ellie's Ellie. That was the first one that I was like, that spot, you can't do that. But Ellie, this is just an insane stat. Sarah Langs does incredible research for for MLB. Ellie's the first player with 25 stolen bases in his team's first 38 games since Kenny Lofton in 1996. I mean, that just kind of puts into perspective just what he's doing. I mean, this, and then before that, it was Vince Coleman in 1991. Before that, Ricky Henderson in 1988. I mean, these are some of the best base stealers on the of all time.
Right.
So what he's doing, it's just like our friend Reds Daily had the tweet. Like, he has almost twice as many steals as the entire Giants team has. Like, he's just making a mockery of stealing bases in the current game of baseball. Like, no one does anything like this. And, yeah, he's an incredible weapon. Man, if we had a whole lineup that could be around him, that could put the ball in play, imagine how much all these stolen bases would really matter. Man, when you get Matt McClain and Noelvi Marte and you get a lineup around what he can do, that's when, man, you can really jump on teams early and often with it.
You need Ellie De La Cruz and maybe three other All-Stars. And I know people are like, oh my God, three other All-Stars? Three other All-Stars or borderline All-Stars and you have a World Series lineup. Like, because he himself produces so much and he provides so many opportunities for other guys that I'm getting closer and closer to saying just sign a blank check. The only concern I have is clearly how long is he going to be this athletic? How long is he going to be this fast? Will his body change significantly between age 22 to 29? Those are the things that we don't know. That is a risk. But right now, this Ellie De La Cruz that we get to watch is a blessing. And I mean, I'm just being honest. He's the best player that I've seen play in a Reds uniform outside of Joey Votto, obviously. But Joey Votto is just a different player. So I don't really like comparing those two. But I know people would go crazy if I said that he's the best player that I've seen play in a Reds uniform, because Joey Votto does exist. I'm well aware of that. But completely different players. So anything else to add before we get into the next section?
What I will say about, you know, him aging, like Trey Turner's 30 years old. So, I mean, Ellie's still got quite a ways before he gets into that. Just randomly, I put up the stolen base leaders. Did you know Spencer Steer is 7th in Major League Baseball or 6th in Major League Baseball with 10 stolen bases?
He does a pretty good job of, like, timing. Not tonight he didn't, but he does a pretty good job of timing jumps. I don't know how, like, Spencer Steer is not, like, super fast, but he's got some IQ to him.
Yeah.
Jonathan India stole a bag tonight, and that was a pretty good bag. This Reds team's unique, man. They it's not like it's weird because they don't really have any like super burners outside of maybe Ellie and Fairchild ish, and obviously RIP to Bubba Thompson. But you know, the rest of these guys aren't scared to steal bags. So that's the, like, Fraley's not as scared to steal a bag. Benson obviously isn't. There's really not that many guys on this team. When they get on base, they're automatically not going anywhere, which is cool. That's fun. They just got to find a way to get on base a little bit more. That'd be ideal.
Yeah, we got some Bubba talk coming up. Little teaser.
Oh, some Bubba talk. Don't go anywhere. All right, folks. You know the drill. The Game Time app. Download the Game Time app. Use the code CINCY, CINCY. You get $20 off your first purchase. Terms do apply. And of course, that means if you're going to use that code, it's because you're looking for tickets. And what tickets? It doesn't matter. They got them all on the Game Time app. You can go to MLB, NHL. I understand NHL isn't really around Cincinnati. Maybe some NBA, Pacers. Shout out to the Pacers. Shout out to the Guardians. You know, they're fighting tooth and nail in the NBA playoffs. Or maybe it's just the Red Legs. Whatever you may want to do, you can do it on the Game Time app. Use code CINCY, CINCY, for $20 off your first purchase. And again, asterisks, terms do apply. You know, I was going to say, what was I going to say? It was 988. It's always on the screen as a reminder. Don't want to blow past that. But again, I think, again, if you're in a situation, 988, we all know the drill there. I was thinking to myself, Andrew Abbott today, I don't want to say he didn't look great. Like, you look at the score, like, you look what he was able to produce, and you're like, all right, this was a damn good outing. Was at the ballpark? Like, why did I feel like that? Did I not watch the game good enough? Because, I mean, to be fair, I was bouncing back and forth trying to drive and pay attention to my phone, which is something that many people would tell you that you shouldn't do, but I did it anyways. How was your overall impression of Andrew Abbott? Without looking at the box score or all that, if you just watched the game and you didn't really look at it, what was your initial impression?
I would say he grinded through it. I think that David Bell made a great decision pulling him when he did. That was really in the Giants have a heavy platoon lineup, and that was they're like right-handed bats that you want to get a right-handed pitcher against. So I thought he made a good decision. Abbott was only, I think, at 88 pitches when he pulled him. But yeah, I mean, Abbott's having an incredible season. Really kind of has flown under the radar. I was dead wrong. I thought he was one of the guys that was going to regress the most, and he almost looks as good as he looked early last year when he kind of came up and just, kind of took the team by storm and was the ace of the Reds rotation when they desperately needed literally anyone to start. But he's been great. I don't think his stuff was like, I don't think it was great tonight, but nice to see him battling through it just like Hunter Green yesterday. Didn't have his best stuff, but he battled through it. It's nice to see some of those kind of starts because it's kind of felt like it's been, with a lot of these younger pitchers, it's been feast or famine. If they don't have their good stuff, it's been a bad night. And it felt like there's been several starts of late where it's been, you know, guys getting through that. And I guess that's, you know, just getting maturity and, getting some major league starts and, getting some experience under your belt.
I agree. I mean, and listen, Andrew Abbott, he is a pitcher, right? Like the traditional sense of the word, like he's not, I don't want to say he doesn't have good stuff. Cause I think that would be, it's just unfair to say that someone doesn't have good stuff when they're in the major leagues. Clearly their stuff is more than serviceable if you're able to get major league hitters out, but it just seems like he's a guy that's going to rely on location, change of speeds, and kind of utilizing the over-aggression of some hitters to his advantage. And I just didn't think he threw the ball that well, and I looked down at the score line, and I'm like, well, it doesn't matter what I think. Maybe it was because the Reds couldn't score any runs, and they scored one in the top of the first, and then he gave up a bomb in the bottom of the first, so it was just an initial, like, puke, you know? Maybe that was, like, that was the real problem, is that it just, it was, you know how they say first impressions matter. Maybe it was a bad first impression tonight, and then after that, it kind of settled in, and we got back on track. So, shout out to Andrew Abbott. And, of course, the bullpen as well. So, Justin Wilson, a guy really struggled last time out. Boy, I'll tell you what, thank the Lord heavens above. You can talk about a guy that needed to have a pretty good outing. That was him, because if he'd have came out here and blew this lead, the Sam Moll folks that were absolutely ready to burn X.com down, they would have literally burned the city down. But he didn't. Came in, threw the ball well.
Yeah, I thought he had the best stuff I thought of anyone in this game. Wilson pitched very well. Pagan and Sims, I think they definitely took advantage of the ballpark that they're pitching in, but you know, both guys didn't walk anyone, and if you don't walk anyone, that you can get by with a lot of stuff in a ballpark like this. So, you know, good to see those guys both, and Justin Wilson as well. He didn't walk anyone either. Good to see them attack hitters. That's what you have to do, especially in a ballpark like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of attacking hitters, more like attacking catchers. This batter interference thing, I know you had posted about it maybe like last week or something, and it just seems like the Reds never, ever catch a break with this thing. Every single time there's even the somewhat semi-semblance of a guy getting touched behind the plate, they call it. And then when guys are falling over their face and Tyler Stevenson or Luke Maley is trying to throw somebody out, it's all fair game and everything's good. I know that Welsh was talking about the swing back of the bat, right? Like he didn't catch him on the follow through. It was kind of like the recoil effect after that might have clipped the catcher. My question is like, don't you think it's a little unfair though that a player can't just swing his bat like in somewhat of a traditional way, and that's if somehow the catcher decides to move up the line or throw it and fall forward, that it's the hitter's problem? Again, maybe I'm wrong in thinking that, but it just feels like that rule needs to have a little bit of an adjustment to it personally, because the other thing I would like to see, Nick, before I kind of let you take the reins with this, is I would really like it to be a judgment call personally. Like, it needs to be, there needs to be some semblance of saying like, hey, this really might have affected the catcher, or this was just like not a, this is what he did. TJ Friedl barely nick his jersey. Like, I don't even know if he touched him. He might have barely nicked his button on his jersey. Next thing you know, we're making guys go back to bases. I hate that. So that's just food for thought. Whether or not that'll change ever, I doubt it. But your thoughts on the batter interference?
Yeah, that was exactly my thoughts. Is this seems to be a judgment call. And I don't really love the idea of giving umpires any more gray area.
Right.
But this is like, this has to, you have to have like some common sense with this. There has to be some spirit of the rule. The rule is meant to, so the batter can't block the catcher from throwing the guy out. The teacher did nothing to do that.
No.
It's dumb. I don't feel like anyone enjoys those kind of calls. Like, this is an entertainment business. Let's just make the calls common sense. If he does something that impedes the throw, then yeah, it's batter interference or follow through interference or whatever the hell interference it is. And if not, it's not. Leave it at that.
Yeah. That call is the same kind of semblance in nature of what I hate about the sliding into bases now with replay. Before replay, I didn't have a problem with the idea of like, you know, having to make sure that you're on the base, because you're not getting those split second came off the bag calls where guys called them out. Now, since you can replay, it's like these guys they know in their mind that they can't come off at all. So they're contorting their bodies. Like, and maybe I'm an old man and I'm worried about injuries too much, but seriously, like a guy's oven mitt or whatever you want to call that thing, barely coming off the base, just the slightest little bit, is not the integrity of the rule. It's not the spirit of the rule. Like, they stole the base. If you overslide the base, sure, that's fine. You can be out. But the concept that your fingers barely bounce up while you're sliding in there, I hate it. It's not the nature of the rule. It's just not the way that, in my opinion, baseball should be played. And hopefully at some point we figure out these little nuances with replay and all these things, and we can kind of clean it up. And like you said, as weird as it is to say, I think giving the umpires a little more gray area, or at least a little more semblance of making a judgment call, is probably what's best. But we'll probably complain about that when they finally give them the ability to make their own calls, because then we'll argue that it's inconsistent and we'll be right back to the drawing board. But who knows?
Well, let's take away calling balls and strikes. Let's give them the power back on this call.
There you go.
It all evens out. But I tell you what, if I'm a Reds coach, I'm telling Tyler Stevenson and Luke Maley, hey, anytime someone steals a base, you try to bump into the batter, because you're going to get it called half the time. What it's going to take is this is what is going to happen. This is going to happen in the playoffs, in a big game, in a huge spot, and everyone's going to get really mad about it. Then they'll finally change the rule. But until then, when it's just 1-162, they don't care. It's, well, whatever. We'll make it once everyone really gets mad about it.
Yep. Just like most things. 100%. Heaven forbid you fix something before it's a real problem. All right, Nick. Some big news here. You teased it earlier. You teased it earlier, and I know you won't be able to get to it right off the bat, because unfortunately, and maybe you will, but I doubt it, because usually you go down from the ranks from top to bottom, and I don't think Bubba's at the top, but that's here nor there. Reds MILB, they've been waiting around for, 45, 50 minutes ever since you teased it. They've been on their pins, needles. They've got their popcorn ready. Let them know, Nick. Reds MILB.
Well, at 1:28 in the morning, I'm sure you want to hear about 6 minor league games, but that's what we had. All right, we'll start off with AAA Louisville. They beat Indianapolis 3-0. Bats improved to 19-18 on the season. Christian Roa, he was used as a reliever tonight. Found that a little interesting. Pitched really well, though. 3 innings, just 1 hit. Struck out 2. Roa's a guy I really like. He can throw the ball up high 90s. I think he was hit 97 tonight. Struggles with command. He's also had a bunch of injuries, but he's an interesting pitcher. I don't know if the Reds are going to look at him as a Nick Martinez 2.0. That's kind of what it felt like they used him tonight, but nonetheless, really good to see some results from him. Alex Young, another scoreless inning. He has gone 3 1/3 scoreless, 6 strikeouts with the bat. So if you're a Reds reliever, you better pitch well because there's like 7 guys down at AAA that could take your spot. One of them is Tony Santion. Perfect inning, 2 strikeouts. I keep bringing the stat up because I think it's just incredible. Santion has allowed an earned run in 2 out of 26 appearances between spring training and AAA this season. Just incredible. Nick Martini, 2 for 4, hit a home run. Martini's homered in each of his first 2 games since being optioned to Louisville. Martini had exit velocities of 104, 103, and 97 on his 3 balls put in play. Shout out Nick Martini. Blake Dunn was 1 for 3. Peyton Burdick, tough day, 0 for 4, 4 strikeouts. And now to the main event, the Chattanooga Lookouts. Yes, they were swept in a doubleheader. They lost game one, 3-2 to Tennessee. They lost game 2, 5-1. Yes, they're only 10-21 on the season. But Bubba Thompson, he made his debut, and he had 2 hits. 2 for 6 in the 2 games combined. Shout out to Bubba Thompson. Actually went 0 for 4 in game 1, turned it around and had 2 hits in game 2. Tyler Callahan, he's looking a little better. 2 for 6, had a double. Austin Hendrick, not looking better. 0 for 6, 3 strikeouts in the 2 games. Matt Nelson had a good day. 2 for 2, hit his 2nd home run, also walked. Hunter Parks, an okay start. Pitcher, really talented, can really throw the ball hard. He gave up 3 runs over 4 1/3. Down to high A, the Dayton Dragons, they split a doubleheader. They lost game 1, 8-0. Actually only had 2 hits in that one, but rebounded in game 2, 1-7-2. Dragons now 12-18 on the season. Jacob Hurtubise is with the Dragons on a rehab. They had him starting with the ACL. That's the Arizona Complex Reds. Now they moved him to Dayton. Very interesting. I'm not sure I've ever seen a player that went down like 2 levels for a rehab assignment. A little different, but anyways, he was 0 for 3. Rough night for Cam Collier, 0 for 7, 2 strikeouts. Good day, though, for Sal Stewart. On base all 3 times, 2 for 2 with a double. Hector Rodriguez, 2 for 7 in the 2 games with a double as well. All right, and then the Daytona Tortugas, the gold standard of Reds minor leagues. They won 15-4 over Lakeland. Tortugas now 18-13 on the season. Alfredo Duna was 0 for 4 with a walk. Ricardo Cabrera, 1 for 5 with a double. But Ariel Almonte, 2 for 5, homered, 3 RBIs. Ariel Almonte now has 10 home runs. That is the most in the Florida State League. The next most is 5. So he's got twice as many home runs as anyone in that league. That's your Reds MILB.
Presented by somebody at some point.
We got one more spot, folks. We got one more spot.
One more spot.
You want to sponsor it?
It's yours for the taking. All right. I don't think I have anything to add. I mean, Austin Hendrick, I'm sorry that I laughed out loud right there. I didn't mean to do that. I kind of ruined your segment. I just busted out laughing when I see that he's 0 for 6. I don't know. I wish him the best, but it just seems like, I mean, it just goes to show you that if you get drafted high, you get that, man, boy, they want to see you fail as much as one humanly can, possibly can, before they let you go. But heaven forbid Jacob Hurtubise. I'll tell you what. Jacob Hurtubise would have had a bus ticket back to his parents' house faster than you know what if he was doing the same thing as Austin Hendrick was doing. I can tell you that right now. But he didn't.
Do you find that interesting? That I don't. The Arizona Complex League's pretty standard for a rehab assignment.
It seems like he's a big leaguer, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Maybe they're calling him up.
I don't think they are. But it just. Well.
I'd love to know what the story is behind that. We'll never know. But
if he tore it up, I actually would think they would consider it. Like if he was like, you know, Arizona Complex League, got 3 or 4 hits every other day, and then he goes to Dayton and he's just, you know, getting on base at a .750 clip. It wouldn't surprise me if they just were like, you know what, we kind of were hoping this guy was available before. Now we want him back up here, and who knows? It is a shame, though. They always talk about, you know, there's like unfortunate things that happen in people's lives. I know this. If Herdebees never does make it to a big league roster and never gets a big league at bat, it'd be a damn shame, because if he just could have stayed healthy this spring, he would have 100% got himself an opportunity for the Reds. Maybe he still will. We will find out. All right, Red Legs, they get to play again. Who, what, when, where, and why, Nick?
All right, we got a little better game time, 7:15, national TV. Ooh. On Fox tomorrow. Reds will be going up against Mason Black. He's only made one big league start. Actually made his MLB debut on May 6th against the Phillies. Gave up 8 hits, 5 earned runs, but he is the Giants' number 7 ranked prospect. He had a 1.01 ERA in 6 starts at AAA this season. Black relies on 5 pitches, a sweeper, sinker, 4-seamer, slider, and changeup. Really a more finesse pitcher, fastball only, averages about 92. But I seem to remember a guy named Kyle Harrison, who the Reds will see on Sunday, who made his debut at Oracle Park against the Reds and absolutely dominated. So I'm not taking Mason Black, not taking you lightly. I'm only going to say nice things about you and your family. For the Reds, Nick Lodolo, 3-1, 2.79 ERA. Last start, maybe his worst. It wasn't even that bad, though. 5 innings, 4 earned runs, struck out 6 against the Orioles. Gave up 3 earned runs in the first inning, then retired 11 of the next 12. Lodolo has never faced the Giants. No active Giants have faced him. Knock on wood, I feel like that's a good sign, Trace, that no one's saw him with his stuff. A couple other quick stats on Lodolo that I just found very interesting. Lodolo has retired the leadoff hitter in each of his last 10 innings. That's a pretty remarkable stat. Opponents also hitting just 0-71. They're 2-for-28 against Lodolo when he gets 2 strikes. So he is really dominating when he's able to get ahead in the count.
Nick Lodolo is a best pitcher the Reds have. Incredible pitcher. If he's got even his B stuff, he's going to be a tall task for the Giants in that ballpark. You know, I mean, listen, obviously, you never know, but I love the situation the Reds are going to find themselves in tomorrow. The fact they're playing national televised game, I also will be very, very pleased with that, because I like the cameras. I think the cameras look better on national televised games. So, you know, looking forward to it. 7:15, also like that start. I like that start as well.
All right, well, thanks so much for listening today to Chatterbox Reds. Really appreciate all your support. So nice to have a winning podcast here on your Saturday morning. If you've not yet subscribed to Chatterbox Reds, wherever you listen to this podcast, make sure you do that right now. We got new episodes every morning after every game, even games that start at 10:15 on the East Coast. We always have you covered, so please subscribe. If you could, leave us a 5-star review and tell a friend, tell a Reds fan about Chatterbox Reds. We'd really appreciate that. We will see you Saturday night. We'll be live about 9:45 or so on Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube. Of course, there'll be a podcast in your feed bright and early on Sunday morning. Have a great Saturday. Have a great rest of your weekend. Let's make it 2 in a row, Reds, on Saturday night. Go Reds.